Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 11th of January. Rick Moran is our guest, political columnist for Pajamas Media, and we are going to be talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Is he ever going to enter this race, or is he going to keep collecting data for a long period of time to see whether it behooves him to enter the race for the presidency? Rick wrote in a recent piece in Pajamas Media about what happened in New Hampshire and said that he has been following politics for 35 years. He cannot recall such a universal, all-encompassing, and ultimately totally overblown media frenzy about a candidate that turned out to be so extraordinarily wrong. There's a lesson there, he says, for us somewhere, but frankly, he was too stunned to see it at the moment. Maybe he sees it today. We're also going to look at issues, which I think are playing a role here, issues of gender and certainly issues of race, and we'll look at the upcoming caucuses and primaries and talk some more politics this hour, and welcome your phone calls for Rick as well. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Hi, Rick. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, what is the story with Bloomberg? Is he going to enter this race or not? This has been going on forever.
Yes, and it's going to keep going on. Bloomberg's only hope, really, to enter the race and be competitive is if either Mr. Obama or Mr. McCain are not, or I guess would have to be both are not the nominees for their respective parties. The reason being, Bloomberg is basing his entire run on the idea that independents and like-minded Democrats and Republicans would be so disgusted with the choices presented them after the conventions that they would flock to his banner.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he certainly has the money that that would make it extremely at least competitive in the sense that nobody would be able to outspend him.
Yeah, he's got billions, doesn't he? Billions and billions.
Yeah, and there are some estimates I've seen that would $800 million to get on all the ballots, handle all the ballot challenges, build up an organization, and spend on advertising. Something like $800 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this part of this Unity 08 campaign, so he would be likely to choose somebody who was, I mean, he's nominally a Republican, that he would choose a Democrat to be on the ticket with him, so we've got this bipartisanship, and that's another plus for this for an ultimate campaign?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I don't quite know how he plans on working this this gig. Whether it's going to be a party, an actual party, or whether he's just going to make a run, on his own.
Right.
I can't imagine him not forming some kind of front party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe that's where Unity 08 comes in. But right now he's got a lot of establishment support out there. Well, maybe not a lot, but the support he has is serious.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to look at him as a serious player in the presidential politics for the coming year.
Why is he dilly-dallying around with this for so long?
Well, again, I think it's a question of him waiting to see when, the dust settle. If it looks like Obama is going to be the nominee for the Democratic Party, I doubt very much whether he would enter the race. Obama, his strength as so far shown in Iowa and New Hampshire with independent voters, with new voters,
mm-hmm.
I just don't think he believes that he could make a decent run unless he had, the bulk of independent voters in America.
Right. All right, let's go to New Hampshire for a moment. I was interested in what you wrote about this, that there's a lesson in how everybody was so wrong, but somewhere, there's a lesson somewhere, but frankly, you say, I am too stunned to see it at the moment. That was a couple days ago. Can you see it now?
Yes, I can. In fact, I wrote about it on my personal blog, rightwingnuthouse.com. Basically, it's this. Don't pay any attention to anybody except the American people when they vote.
All right. That's good.
I mean, basically, it comes down to that. I just had never seen anything like that in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and it was understandable to a certain extent. Here you had this guy coming out of Iowa, an earthquake. He was just piling, up the numbers in New Hampshire prior to the vote, and to make matters even more, compelling for Obama, was the reaction of the Hillaryites in New Hampshire,
right,
who were, they were depressed, they were resigned to the fact that they were going to lose. The internal polling for both campaigns said that Obama was going to win comfortably. And, of course, the candidate herself, I think, on Monday, with her moment, her emotional moment, I think it all piled up, and sat on her at that point. And that's why, one of the reasons I think she kind of teared up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. We got to bring up race, and we have to bring up gender. And I wish we didn't, but I'm wondering if this plays a role at all, that women did vote for her because at the last minute, because they felt she was really getting pounced on. And I also want to look at the issue of race, that there are some pollsters suggesting that people were lying to pollsters that they wouldn't vote for an African American.
Yes, that's the so-called Bradley effect. But let's take up the gender question first, because to me, it's remarkable. It is the most remarkable statistic coming out of New Hampshire. 57% of all the voters who cast a ballot in the Democratic primary were women.
Mm-hmm.
That is just remarkable. When you think about it, that is just remarkable. Of course, that's why she won.
Right.
Not because as many, not many, but some, Democrats, perhaps more on the fringe of the party, are saying, which is that the vote was stolen, or the voting machines were hacked. No, what happened was, and I think pollsters have pretty much decided this is the case. What happened was, so many more women turned out than they were expecting that it broke the turnout models, where they were expecting 51-52%. When you get 57%, all bets are off, and their numbers are no good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what happened to the polls. Is that 50? I can't believe it. 57% of the people who voted in the Democratic primary were women. That is a remarkable testament to her ability to attract women voters.
Mm-hmm.
And just absolutely, Republicans should be quaking in their boots with those kind of numbers staring them in the face.
But she lost Iowa by 12%. So what was going on with that?
I think a couple of things. First of all, Iowa was a much smaller universe of voters, about 5-6 times smaller. That's one thing. Another could very well be the fact that that moment that she had on Monday. And this is Terry McAuliffe, one of her main advisors, talking. Said in the New York Times the next day that moment, emotional moment she had on Monday, probably humanized her to the point that women came home at that point and said, this is historic. This is something that we've been working for 40 years. It's time to get off the pony and start slogging. And I think that's what happened.
So a moment can change everything. A moment can humanize a candidate.
Oh, sure, yes. Huh. And especially one that gets as much play as that one did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was all over the Internet, all over YouTube. It was all over the news for 24 hours. And remember, the pollsters, the last poll wrapped up right around noon on Monday. And it was Strategic Vision is the name of the polling company. And their last poll, I think, showed Obama 7 points ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that emotional moment didn't occur until Monday afternoon. So for the 36 hours following, you had, an interesting move back to Hillary.
Yeah. What about this? And I don't want to believe that I live in a country where this could be the case, but, I know that it could be as well. This issue of race, I was appalled by some of Karl Rove's comments yesterday concerning Obama. I just thought they were – how did the guys say this? They really were racist. This question of, white people, when they're getting called by a pollster, aren't going to admit that they wouldn't vote for an African-American. Are we still living in that world?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Really?
And it's very difficult to measure the effect. It's called the Bradley effect. It's a well-known effect among pollsters, in that people just don't seem to want to admit that they're racist at heart, and that they wouldn't vote for a black man, you know, come hell or high water. Now, in the Bradley, I've seen, remember this from the Bradley race, I think it was 86, maybe 88. Bradley being the, Tom Bradley, the mayor of Los Angeles, the African-American mayor of Los Angeles, who in the polls was up like 25 points and ended up winning by about 8, I believe. And at that point, they were saying, well, it looks like the, you know, this Bradley effect is real, and it accounted for about 15% of all the voters in Los Angeles. 15%. And, you know, as far as what kind of country we are, you know, this is America. This is, race is a problem. As you well know, it still is a problem. It's going to be a problem. And politicians, being the hard edged people that they are, look at the problem and either try to take advantage of it or try to mitigate it. And in the case of Obama, I don't know what percentage it was, but it was, I don't see how you could say it was not a factor. And even in the exit polls, people coming out and saying, oh yeah, I voted for Obama, when they actually voted for Hillary. You know, it's not nice to contemplate, but it's there, and politicians know it's there, and they deal with it.
So let's talk about race and gender in the road ahead. That, do you anticipate that you will see a very large difference in male-female voting when it comes to female vote for Hillary Clinton? And do you imagine that race then will also be very, very important to Barack Obama as he campaigns through South Carolina and states that have heavy African-American populations?
Gender more important to Hillary than race to Obama. Obama is the first African-American candidate to transcend race. His support among young people is just fabulous. There's no contest between he and Hillary. He brings people who have been outside of the process or even, you know, never taken part in the process. He brings those people in. It was a much smaller number in New Hampshire, which hurt him. It was about 6% of the voters in New Hampshire were new voters, voters who had never voted before. And now most of those were probably 18-year-olds, whereas in Iowa, Obama got people, new voters from the entire range of ages. And I think that was about 12% of all Democratic attendees. Of course, there's no way to count the numbers, but about 12% of the attendees at the Democratic caucuses in Iowa were new voters, which is a remarkable statistic. And in New Hampshire, Obama got 66% of those new voters. And, of course, you know, New Hampshire being a relatively white state, I think there's only about 6%, 7% African Americans, the overwhelming majority of those new voters are white. So race will not play, although it will help him tremendously in the South, where the percentage of African Americans is close to 50% in a lot of states. But north of that, he has his own strength among white groups that will help him. Hillary, on the other hand, is going to have to bank on New Hampshire-like numbers for the most part, because men tend to view her much more negatively than women.
And maybe we're making too much of these early states, and we're just in for a rip-roaring, interesting, good time, and it's going to be all over the place, huh?
Yeah, especially since when you, in the Democratic primaries, where you have two candidates who are extremely well-funded.
Right.
You know, they both raised over $100 million, if you can wrap your mind around that figure. And in addition to that, they both have nationwide organizations. They're both in it for the long haul. excuse me. I would think, just from looking at the possibilities, I would think that we will have a Democratic candidate probably by the end of March, but there's no telling.
And how about a Republican candidate?
Oh, God.
Who knows, huh? Who knows?
It's just a remarkable race there. Yeah. The Republicans could very well have, in the first five states, they could very well have five different winners.
Mm-hmm.
which is which means, boy, for a political junkie, there's, you know, there's that one dream of a brokered convention.
Right, right.
Where the floor fights go back and forth, and the stakes are so high,
right.
And there's just excitement piled upon excitement.
yeah.
And it's not likely on the Republican side, but it's a possibility.
Oh, it'd be fun to see, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, Rick.
And I'm nominally a Republican, but I'd love it.
Rick Moran is our guest, political columnist for Pajamas Media, and we're welcoming phone calls. We're looking at Bloomberg. I don't know if this is news or not, but whether or not he's gathering in this very intricate fashion data about whether or not it would behoove him, because he might win, to enter the presidential race. What do you think of that? And we're also still analyzing all that happened. Maybe we should just pay attention to the voters, as he suggested, and skip all these pundits. And you do listen to everybody in a different way, don't you, after what happened in New Hampshire? Are we making too much of all of that as well? So let's talk. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rick Moran is our guest, political columnist for Pajamas Media. I also want to give you, because our phone lines are filled, the email address in case you would like to send a message to us. We may be able to get to that. talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Jim is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, so the discussion of Michael Bloomberg is what I'm interested in.
All right.
And the earlier part of the conversation, if Hillary Clinton is nominated, and virtually all the voters are women that happen to be registered Democrats, then she will be in the White House. But getting back to what this program was, I think, intended to be, is if the these commercial marketing vehicles that call themselves political parties end up nominating such polarizing extreme left and right figures, such as Hillary Clinton, and then versus Romney or Giuliani for the Republicans, then Mr. Bloomberg can wait for that opportunity and be in an excellent position to take the overwhelming American majority, which is much more towards the center. And he has the additional advantage if the polling goes against his favor late in the going, he has the additional advantage of just deciding to drop out of the race, which these other folks, once they're nominated, they can't do.
Rick.
Well, I think it's very important to remember third parties or third party candidates have always had a very, very difficult time in America, especially in the 20th century. You have recent evidence to show you that somebody like a Ross Perot, for instance, who was at one point in the polls at like 12-15%, ended up getting about 4%, 5% of the vote. Nader, not quite so much, but just enough, evidently, in 2000 to swing the election to George Bush. Going back even further to John Anderson in 1980, who was running as a he got about 10% of the vote in September, and a lot of people were thinking that he would really muck up the race, and he evidently did not, because Ronald Reagan carried many 47 states, I think. Excuse me. The point being, Bloomberg knows all this. What he is banking on is this extraordinary flux in American politics today. People are extremely dissatisfied. You have 70% of the country saying we're headed in the wrong direction. That's unprecedented. So Bloomberg hopes to take advantage of that by calling out the partisans in both parties, who he thinks might get about 25-30% of the vote each, and having him come and sweep in and pick up all the independents and mm-hmm. a few Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
That's his plan. It never works out like that, however. It never has, and I don't think it ever will.
You know, you got to be a little bit, even if you love the guy and a lot of people really like him, there is something off base in this country for people to be able to enter a race partially because they got a lot of dough. They got a lot of money themselves.
Yes. Yeah, it's a problem without a solution. And the reason being, the Supreme Court has ruled time and time and time again that money in politics is exactly the same as speech. That you can't separate giving money to a candidate or spending money, you know, from the free speech, you know, the First Amendment. You just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Every time it's been challenged, the Supreme Court has come down in favor of the money. And I personally think that politicians have made things much more difficult by trying to reform campaign finance. Every time they reform campaign finance, somebody finds a loophole somewhere that's as big you can drive a semi through it.
Right.
And so you have these 527s now, which are these so-called 527 groups, independent, quote-unquote, groups that run negative advertising from, you know, from dawn to dusk, the closer you get to election day. So, you know, I can't say for sure, but my guess is that that Bloomberg may be hoping to throw the election into the House of Representatives, where he might, you know, where his block of electoral votes would matter quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a plan, a viable plan for him. I couldn't say.
Jim, thanks for the call. Rob is next from Kansasville. Hi, Rob.
Hi. I just had an opinion on what the difference was between Iowa and New Hampshire. Is I think the candidates that have real excited followers did better in Iowa because the people that are excited about their candidate were more likely to devote their time to go to a caucus. And the candidates that I'll call more the ho-hum candidates that have support but not excited followers were more willing to devote, you know, a 30-minute time frame to just go place a vote in New Hampshire. And it shows, you know, Obama has a dead, you know, real excited supporters. He did well in Iowa, not so much in New Hampshire. And like Ron Paul got a bump in Iowa because he's got dedicated followers, Huckabee, and then the exact opposite happened in New Hampshire.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analysis. I would say that Iowa is set up for that kind of contest where you have the dedicated followers of one candidate or another showing up at these caucuses. Although this time around, it wasn't so much you know, people who were interested in the party or even so much in the candidate as much in the idea of a candidacy. I think Obama has broken through, not just, and forget his race. It's hard to do, but forget Obama's race for a minute. This is a guy whose appeal is so remarkable, I think. And I'm speaking, as I said, as a nominal Republican here. So this is just, you know, analyzing from a political point of view. The guy has what it takes to reach out and snatch up these people who have never participated in the politics before, probably never even thought of participating. And yet there is something in his themes, in his demeanor, in the way he comes across that attracts them. This is a new phenomenon in politics. It's why the polls are going to be very, very susceptible to being wrong over the next several months. And, you know, I happen to agree with the gentleman, though, that in New Hampshire it's a little less of that, which is probably why his support fell off a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Do you imagine that we're going to see a profound change, Rick, in the way that all of these political programs on television, all of these people who write columns, and there are so many of them, are going to really change the way they're writing about and interpreting these races and looking more at the voters instead of the polls because they were so wrong and they're so embarrassed about all of it?
Yeah, that won't happen. We're a bunch of egoists, us columnists, so we're not going to change, no. I'd like to say we would, but no. Look, the polls, and I've been looking, I've been reading a lot about this. There are a couple of really good websites, pollster.com. If you really want to get into polls and what they mean, that's a great website. They've been discussing this since New Hampshire, several of their professionals. And basically, they've come to the conclusion that until they can figure out the impact on turnout of people like Obama and Hillary Clinton, that their polls will be, you know, suspect as far as, you know, an accurate snapshot of the moment that they're taken. Because that's all polls are. Polls are not predictive. They are snapshots of a moment. And because of that, you know, it becomes very difficult to get accuracy in any way as far as predicting is concerned.
But they were very accurate when it came to the Republican race. So how do you explain that?
Because not much changed in the last 36 hours for the Republicans. Except perhaps McCain perhaps came up a little bit. And they probably anticipated that pretty well. The exit polls also were very accurate for the Republicans, not so the Democrats. You know, as I said, that led to some interesting charges about hacking voting machines and so forth. That really, you know, is not true. It's just a question of the pollsters not being able to practice their art.
Thanks, Rob, so much for your call. We go next to Dave from Wanakee. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I think that the big story so far has been that the Democratic primaries have turned out much more voters than Republican primaries. I think that's indicative of the fact that Democrats are more enthusiastic about their candidates. Independents are attracted to their candidates, and they aren't attracted to the Republican candidates. So I see in the November election, it may portend a landslide of Democratic politicians.
No matter who the nominee, Dave?
Exactly. No matter who the nominees are.
Mm-hmm. Rick?
I think that's absolutely correct.
You do?
And, oh, yes. Republicans are scared, witless. They just, the Republicans are offering pretty much the same. Democrats are offering change. And when you have 70% of the country, as I said, who believe the country is on the wrong track, that would seem to indicate that voters want change.
Mm-hmm.
The races, if you look at the national polls head-to-head, Republican-Democrat, they're not so far apart. But a presidential election, of course, is not a national race. It is 50 different races. And in those states, in states that matter, Democrats are ahead, sometimes by a lot. So Republicans are very worried, and they should be.
But who do you see among all the field for the Republican nomination? Is there somebody who could really get Republicans going to the polls in huge numbers?
John McCain, perhaps. He seems to appeal to a certain segment of the independents, independent hawks, particularly, as well as liberal hawks or Democratic hawks.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls people, you know, across the Republican line in that respect. I don't think it'd be enough, though. I really don't. He's because he does not play well in other Republican strongholds. I don't think he excites Republicans as much as perhaps some other Republican candidates. But, of course, those Republican candidates who excite the base don't attract the independents and Democrats that McCain does. So it's a conundrum.
See, I think, I'll just give my opinion here, but we were talking about this at the dinner table last night. Let's talk about Huckabee for a little while. Because of all the people in the race, he has excited the base, and he's excited the press, and people just like the way he talks. They think he's one heck of a campaigner. What are the chances of Huckabee, if he gets the base to vote for him in all the states that are ahead, to become the nominee?
At this point, he's got as good a chance as any other Republican. I really have to say that because I think what we're going to see over the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I'm sorry, with Super Duper Tuesday coming up on February 5th.
Pretty soon, right?
I think we're going to see three Republican candidates come out of February 5th Super Tuesday with enough delegates that they feel that they can go on. Three candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does, of course, is split the vote. The more you split the vote, the more the minority vote that that Huckabee is seeking pays off. And you know, what are you going to do? The guy has locked up pretty much. He's got 60% of the evangelical
right.
vote, and that will serve him very, very well. He won't need a lot of money because the churches are turning out his voters for him. You know, whether
right,
that's a
right.
good thing or not, we could talk about that, too.
Because mm-hmm.
I don't happen to think it's a very good thing.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much for the call, Dave. Sarah from Pell Lake. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm going to bring it back to Obama and the Democratic Party for a moment. And I guess, you know, everyone keeps talking about race, and I just don't see it. I'm a 30-something, and I don't know if it's different, and this will be a question when I'm done with it, but I don't know if it's any different for the younger than the older people, but I just don't. I see them as Democratic candidates. I don't see it as a woman, as a African-American. No one even speaks about the first Latino who was in the race either, who just dropped out. So I don't see them as that. I see them as who's going to be the best candidate, who's going to be the person that I want in the White House, who's going to be the one that can lead this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, to me, I just don't think race is a big issue. And my question is, is there a divide with young people? Is there a reason that Obama can talk to young people? It's because we don't see the race as maybe an older generation does. And just it's just nothing but the times that we grew up in. And I'm wondering if there's a divide between the older and the younger and who's voting for Obama, who's not.
Mm-hmm. Rick.
That's a very perceptive observation. There is a divide. Hillary Clinton won the 55 and older crowd, which is the most important demographic a candidate can win. And she won it decisively. She won it by 12 points. And, yes, I would say that over 55 crowd looks at Obama in a different way than the under 30 crowd. I think that's a given. I think it's very encouraging that the under 30 crowd looks at the candidates like that. I think that's the wave of the future. But at the moment, you have the number one voting bloc in America, the over 55 groups who support Hillary Clinton, and I believe that you know, part of that is racial. I'm sure.
The women do. The men don't, right?
Oh, the men. Well, you know, I didn't get that far in my analysis as far as breaking down the over 55 vote between men and women. I would suspect that it's about even. In that the over 55 women actually abandoned Hillary in Iowa, and actually voted for John Edwards. So what they came back in New Hampshire and voted for her. Like I said, I would guess over 55, you're looking at pretty even numbers, male and female.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sarah, so much for your call. Kirk is next from Franklin. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, yes. I was calling on behalf of if we'll just say Hillary was to drop out, there's always a chance.
Drop out? Why would she drop out?
Well, not drop out. Just say she ends up losing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You have a chance of Gore coming in. Uh-huh. Gore said that if Hillary didn't finish good or if she wasn't in the race, that there was a chance that he would come in.
When did he say that?
That was at the beginning of I believe last year.
I don't remember that comment, Rick.
Yeah, if I understood correctly, the gentleman's wondering whether Gore might jump into the race at some point.
Yeah.
I think the only chance that would happen is if we went to the convention and did not have a winner. I think Gore would offer himself as an alternative at that point. I think the same thing. I think the same thing might even happen with Bloomberg at the Republican convention, even though it sounds crazy. Those kind of things happen in brokered conventions, by the way. Somebody emerging from nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and you know, after four or five, six ballots, and nobody's won. Somebody might emerge from nowhere and you know, take the nomination just by stampeding the delegates. It's happened many times in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it would happen for Al Gore, it might. You know, you just never know. Although I don't think the Democrats are going to be broke. I have a brokered convention. I really don't.
No.
But as I said, I really think that race is going to be decided by the end of March.
Let's talk about John Edwards for a while. Do you think that he will be competing actively for Super Tuesday? He really doesn't have much money left. Heavens knows he's got the spirit and the capability to go for long stretches with absolutely no sleep, which astounds me. Do you think he's going to keep competing here or not?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
He'll get 15, 20, 25% the vote in some states. But he's not a serious player anymore, no.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about Mayor Bloomberg and about the Republicans and the Democrats and the polls and the pundits and the races ahead and you name it. 800-486-8655 is our number. Rick Moran is political columnist for Pajamas Media. And to put his politics in perspective, which I guess we do, he calls himself a nominal Republican. It's a good website. It's just, you know, during this year of the presidential run, many of us are looking for terrific websites, and and you can't get enough of what people are writing about it, and it's a great political website. So if you're calling us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, if you'd like to send us an email, that would be perfectly fine as well, and that's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rick Moran is our guest. Let's go to an email here before we go back to phones, Rick. Alice from Fitchburg writes, will the Republicans or the Democrats benefit if Bloomberg runs?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you for a moment. I'm sorry.
Will the Republicans or the Democrats benefit if Bloomberg runs?
Probably the Republicans. I would think that that Bloomberg would pull more Democrat support, more Democratic leaning independents than he would Republican or Republican leaning independents. That's just a horseback opinion. I have no polling data to show that, but that's just my guess from the way that Bloomberg or the positions that Bloomberg has on issues important to both parties.
Mm-hmm. Gene is next from Madison. Hi, Gene.
Yes, I've listened to NPR for years, and if you had a province in a third world country where 81% of the ballots are counted by one company, which is using a secret program, and only politicians can question whether or not that count was done correctly. And then, furthermore, and I can only think of the Ukraine and many other places, when there is a huge difference between the opinion polls and the final poll result, we are very quick on NPR and on other media to say something doesn't seem right. Yet, in America, this is just business as usual and it must have been the woman's vote and whatever. But the point being is here we are in a third world country. Individuals cannot verify that the programming of those machines were set up correctly by one company controlling 81% of the vote. And if you look at the difference between the two congressional districts, there is a big difference between the congressional districts. And if you were to look at the 19% which were hand-counted versus the 81% which weren't, and looking at how it broke for the Republicans, I think perhaps before your guest says, poo-poo, hacking vote, blah, 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 what's your proof?
Rick, somebody's got to take this on in a serious way because this is going to play in every election until people feel that their vote is really being counted correctly.
Let me make just a couple of corrections to the gentleman's argument. I think it's the exact opposite. I think only 20% of the ballots were counted by Diebold machines. I might be wrong there, but I think that's the number that I heard. Diebold machines were used mostly in the cities. I can understand this. The question, however, is Occam's razor. Most of us are probably familiar with Occam's razor, which posits the notion that whatever explanation for a phenomena is the simplest is probably true. So what is simpler? The pollsters' models were broken, as Frank Luntz said on election night, in which most pollsters are now recognizing that the data they entered into these turnout models was corrupted because the models themselves were off considerably. Is that easier to accept than some evil corporation hacked into the machines and changed the vote? And why would they do it? And who do they do it for? And if they're doing it for Hillary Clinton, how come they did it for Hillary and they did it for George Bush in 2004? And, you know, I could go on and on and on.
Right, right.
Okay. This is a question of there's no evidence that Diebold did anything. The evidence that the gentleman presented is not even circumstantial. There's just no evidence. He posited coincidence after coincidence. Okay, so Diebold owns the machines. So what evidence do we have that Diebold is evil enough to do something like that, or that politicians are evil enough to do that? We happen to know now that the New Hampshire Secretary of State took extraordinary measures to make sure that those machines couldn't be hacked. I just look at it as a question of of sanity, of rational thinking. You know, it's not a question of could it happen. Of course it could happen, but and he asked me to prove it. No, I'm afraid the burden of proof is on somebody who posits a spectacular conspiracy theory like that. I'm afraid the burden of proof is on you, sir.
Yeah, and yet we need to make sure, because there are people who feel that way, and they certainly felt that way after the last election, and they felt that way in 2000. We've had a few years here of people feeling that their votes are not counted. I don't know what needs to happen, Rick, but you need to get rid of that. You need to feel that your vote is being counted so that you don't get these ideas. Well, it's the machine, or it's the people who own the machines because they have such and such a political backing. That shouldn't play any part in the vote here, and it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely, agree with you. No problem. Let's do it.
Let's
get rid of these idiotic electronic machines, as far as I'm concerned. Let's go back to paper ballots, for that matter.
Yeah.
The reason people are questioning is because there are a few people, and if I may say, mostly on the left, after 2006, all of a sudden the elections were perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Right. there was no fraud in the 2006 election. It seems apparent to me that there are people who will stir up trouble at the drop of a hat, and that kind of thing works its way through the internet and out into the general public, and you get these doubts. I don't happen to think there's anything to the charges that the vote was fixed in 2004. I think for the exit polls, as they were taken, were published, and they were only half of the voting day had gone
mm-hmm.
when they published those.
Mm-hmm.
So of course they were going to be skewed toward John Kerry. I just don't think that at the moment there's anything to these stories until I see some hard evidence
right.
to the contrary.
I understand. All right, thanks very much, Gene, for the call. We go to Dubuque, where we were. It seems like months ago now, but it was just last week. DJ from Dubuque, hi.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment on the lady that called earlier about the divide between 55 and older and maybe 30-year-olds and younger. I've got three kids that are 30 years old, and I'm over 55. And my experience has been that the main reason the race even comes into people, minorities seem to look at everything through racial filters before they look at any other issues, for example, qualifications or anything else. They look at things through racial filters, and in general, not all of us, but in general, people that are 55 and older raise their kids to be egalitarians or try to look at people for what they're qualified for, and that, in my opinion, that's what you're seeing in these elections. The other thing I wanted to say, too, I think it's absurd that Iowa and New Hampshire basically culls all of the candidates down to one or two people before the entire country has a chance to even have a say-so on it. And, you know, we went to the moon 40 years ago. Why can't we set up a system where we all have a primary electronically where everybody in the nation can vote at the same time and not rely on people in Iowa and New Hampshire, who, in my opinion, don't really represent the United States in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to say.
Thanks, EJ. Thanks for the call. Rick?
Yeah, I think the gentleman has a good point about this current generation. I think part of it is the educational system. I think that there has been enormous strides in teaching tolerance. I think that you know, the conservatives sometimes make fun of that, and there might be, it might go overboard sometime. But I think it's a helpful and healthy thing to do. I'm not quite sure about the other part of the gentleman's question. What was that?
Why is it that these guys in Iowa and these guys and gals and why isn't it a primary?
A national
day?
Primary.
Everybody votes. Yeah.
That's been talked about. The problem there is that you would have candidates camping out in the big states and leaving the little states to wither on the vine. I personally like the idea of a candidate going to Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, and being seen with regular folk. You know, I think that's a good thing. It gives us a chance to see the candidates interact with everyday regular people,
mm-hmm.
And it tells us something about them.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the long primary season also tells us something about the candidate. You know. So, you know, a one-day winner-take-all, pretty much, primary, which is what it would be, I don't think would be beneficial to the process, no.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, DJ, for the call. Here's an interesting email from Peggy, who lived in New York City when Bloomberg was running. She said she was appalled at the idea of his buying the office, but now she's seriously wondering if he's not the only way to fix the existing system of corporations running the country. He needs nobody's money. He disregards partisanship. He sets out to solve problems of which this country has plenty by asking the best minds to get together and solve. I don't know if he can get elected once Peggy writes, but I'll bet anything that if he does, his reelection will be a snap.
That's that individual has a lot better prognostication powers than I do. That's obvious. No, I don't think. First of all, an independent, it would be an interesting, especially the first 6 months. How would they work with the Congress? Not member of party. He'd have to appeal beyond party. Of course, his own party wouldn't have any congressmen in there. And my own take on that would be both parties would be out to slit his throat. Make him a one-term president and an afterthought. That'd be my take on what would happen to Mr. Bloomberg. Whether he could go over the heads of the Congress and to the American people and prevent something like that, I don't know.
Yeah. Let's go to Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. One aside to my main point, trust but verify. When we count the votes in the United States, we have to not just trust a black box algorithm to count the votes, you know, that is owned by a private corporation. We need transparency every step of the way. But my main point was about Michael Bloomberg. You talked about him having a lot of money to be able to run the gauntlet of 50-state ballot access to run a national candidacy. And I wanted to remind the listeners that the Libertarian Party of the United States, nobody has more experience at ballot access than the Libertarian Party. And they have done it on the cheap because they have volunteers who are motivated to go out and do it. And they can do it for much less than you were talking about before. And this is where I see, and I hope that Ron Paul throws in with the Libertarian Party, if he doesn't get the Republican nomination, to run a national campaign for the presidency with the Libertarian Party affiliation.
All right, we got to hold you there. We have about 20 seconds left. Rick?
I would hope that Ron Paul does not run as a third-party candidate. I would hope he, in fact, drops out of the Republican race. I think the recent revelations about his
pretty damning, yeah.
You know, I cannot see this man doing anything except slinking back to Texas with his tail between his legs.
Hmm. We're out of time. Thanks very much, Rick, for being with us. Thank you.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
Rick Moran is a political columnist for Pajamas Media, and you can go to their website. They do really insightful political analysis, I believe, pajamasmedia.com. Pajamas Media is all together. It's all one word. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour, Rhonda Fanning for on-air production in our studios, and thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll be with you again on Monday when, indeed, we will be talking all things political. And we'll be doing that for many Mondays to come as these races keep going on. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Thanks very much for listening. News ahead and many more hours of great conversation. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.